Welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lessard, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. As you know, on Advanced Living Radio, we have a theme. We're dedicated to bringing value to your lives, and that comes from a prayer that I say daily. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Oh, you talk about your comprehensive, off-the-chart, top-of-the-line, 100% go-for-it goal. Well, we're doing it here. And each week, we reach out and find value to bring you something important, something interesting, another piece of the puzzle. And if you've ever put a jigsaw puzzle together, you know how fun it is when you find another piece and they just fit and those little curves go together and it's like, ooh, and the picture starts to form. Well, we're going to do something wonderful today. And before we get into that, just want to thank you for tuning in and thank, of course, our sponsor, AdvancedLiving.com, home of the comfort technology. Because to put the show on, we have some bills to pay, and we invite you to visit AdvancedLiving.com. What if you could plug in a tiny little item that would look like a digital clock? We call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. But what if you plugged it in and the energy was like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room? That you could sleep better, you could think more clearly, your life just generally got better because there was a lot of support energy. Well, go to AdvancedLiving.com, check out the comfort technology, and get ready. Oh, folks, you know on the path there's many twists and turns, there's many challenges on the road of life. Well, guess what we've got today? The author of A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. I mean, yes, by the time we get through with you, planet Earth is going to be easy. We can travel the universe. And, of course, we're going to work with a wonderful, wonderful gentleman, Paul Rademacher, who graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary with a Master of Divinity, and that was in 1985, and then he served as a Presbyterian pastor for 15 years. With twists and turns in his life, as a he's now currently the executive director of the Monroe Institute in Faber, Virginia, and it's a world-renowned institute for the exploration of human consciousness. Now, earlier in his life, the building industry had been a major focus for him, and he'd spent many years as a laborer, journeyman carpenter, general contractor, and designer. And over the years, he's become an acclaimed public speaker, seminar leader, artist, and yes, a closet musician. We don't know how big the closet is or what it looks like, but anyway, he's playing in the closet and having fun as a husband and father of three. So, as we get started today, let's welcome in our wonderful guest, Paul Rademacher. Paul, hello, hello.
Hi, Kenneth. It's great to be with you. And thank you for that introduction and also for that beginning prayer. That's quite something to start off with.
Well, you're welcome. It's nice to set a very grand scope. One of the ministers that I studied with, he spoke about setting high goals, and he said, it's better to shoot for the moon and miss than shoot at a skunk and hit it. So
very appropriate.
So here we are. This wonderful work of yours, the Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, and I love the subtitle, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed. And my gosh, we certainly live in times where major icons, the governments of the world are on shaky ground. The major corporations, I mean, the planet's in turmoil. So much that we've turned to for our stability is now proving to be not as reliable as we would hope for. So it's definitely interesting to say travel tips for the spiritually perplexed. I'm just wondering how you became interested in the study of the spirituality and consciousness.
Well, it wasn't something that I necessarily planned to have happen for me. It was happened to me when I fell off the roof of a home that I was building. My brother and I had a construction company, and back in 1981, we were working on the roof of a home, and I was pulling on a board, and all of a sudden the board gave way, and I found myself falling off of the roof and hit a pile of gravel, landed very awkwardly. Didn't know it at the time, but I had fractured my left hip. Mm. They took me to the hospital and did some initial x-rays and didn't find anything wrong with the hip. So they put me in physical therapy, and while the therapist is working that leg around, cranking it all around, I'm in just excruciating pain. The doctor comes by and says, "You don't look so good." I said, "No, doc, I'm really not." And he says, "Well, let's take some more x-rays of that hip." So they did, and they found a fracture, and they took me out of physical therapy, put me into traction. When he came by to tell me that the hip was broken and that I would be off work for a number of weeks, I found myself going into this spiral downward of pain and anxiety. And as I was spinning downward, it felt like I was out of control, really. All of a sudden, I reached the bottom of something and broke through into another dimension entirely. And in that other dimension, all of the pain that I had in the hip completely vanished. The anxiety that I felt because this was such a busy time of our year and there was no way I could possibly be off work, that dissipated it completely as well, and I found myself surrounded by total and complete and utter peace. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's no such things as accidents, including this accident that happened to me.
Right,
everything had meaning and purpose.
So now you're recommending falling off a roof as a path to enlightenment?
Well, I wouldn't be the first one to have reach enlightenment through trauma. I can guarantee you that. But another thing that happened in that experience was that at some point, and I don't even know at what point it was, because when you enter these other dimensions, time ceases to have the same meaning. But at some point, I found myself standing in front of a being of light, and we were conversing about my life, but we weren't using words. And when I came out of that experience, it was such a powerful, overwhelming thing for me because I didn't know possible. And even if it was possible, it certainly wasn't possible for an ordinary person like myself who was just a building contractor. But here I was suddenly having the experience of moving into and out of another dimension that was completely foreign to me. And it really changed my life.
Oh, boy. That's amazing.
Well, it was for me, and I think the other thing that made it such a landmark in my life was that prior to that time, I had been wrestling with this question of whether or not I should go to seminary because I was beginning to feel a call into the ministry. And when I went into that experience and then came out the other side of it, I thought, well, obviously this is the voice of God, and surely this means I'm supposed to go to seminary, and so I took my wife and at that time two children, and we went to enroll in Princeton Theological Seminary for 3 years, and as you mentioned, I got a Master of Divinity degree from that. But what I guess in the back of my mind, I thought that maybe engaging in church work, I would be able to touch into that reality again. But what I began to realize was that originally I thought that experience was to answer the question of should I go to seminary or not, but I began to realize over time that the real purpose was to create a hunger for me to want to get back to that world again, to understand it more completely, and to share what I learned with other people as well. And so it was that was the beginning of a very long journey for me through 15 years of ministry, and then eventually ending up at the Monroe Institute.
Wow. I mean, I am just so excited, because with the busyness of our lives, especially for so many people in this intense time on the planet, there is so much going on and so many distractions, and then you got to have an experience that was so profound. It was something that got your attention, took you out of the busyness of your life, and let you notice, wow, there's other dimensions, there's other realms of things going on, and they're pretty amazing. And so here you are helping to share that, and I love the way you talked about how it took a while for you to reinterpret it, because your first interpretation said, well, I must go be a minister, versus here's all these realms and dimensions, I've got to keep getting back to those and help others do it.
It's amazing how life truly is a path, and I think it's set up that way, so because we have to go through these series of learnings that kind of build on one another to some extent. Sometimes we take two steps back for every one we take forward, to be sure. But I think that path analogy really is appropriate, because if we were to try to learn everything all at one time, we simply couldn't hold the experience, we couldn't hold the learning. It would be overwhelming and confusing. And so I think that foray into the ministry for me for those 15 years was a time when it allowed me to reevaluate to a large extent, but it was also a time where I gained a lot of skills that are now useful for me in my present job as executive director of the Monroe Institute. But while I was going through it, I had no conception of that whatsoever. In many ways, and I think maybe your listeners can relate to this, in many ways, I just felt like I was kind of stumbling around, not knowing which end was up or even where the path was going. But, you know, eventually, if we stay with it long enough, things, as you were saying before, are sort of like a jigsaw puzzle. One piece comes together with another piece, and then suddenly we see a new form that takes place of the old form, but it doesn't happen overnight.
Right. Well, to me, what you're mentioning, I think, is so important. The old saying, first crawl before you walk, before you run. Okay, that kind of a sequence of building our skills and abilities. And then, to me, it's so fascinating because of your background in construction and then going into a church. And as you were saying that, in my mind, I was going, fascinating that here, if we looked at perhaps for a moment to consider that some of the churches or religious institutions were there doing the best they could to attempt to construct a bridge between physical reality and the infinite, the eternal, which is so amazing, and yet how do we combine those two realms? Wow, what a task! And so here you've been in both.
Yeah, that's very well said. I think it is a tremendous task. In fact, I had a professor of mine at one point was talking about the role of the church has traditionally been twofold. One is to sort of illuminate the way and provide a connection to the spiritual world, between the physical world and the spiritual world. But on the other hand, it's also sort of its other role was to protect those who were not sufficiently prepared from making that transition too fast, you know, because it can be a little bit disorienting when that happens. And so you have these conflicting roles that the church has been holding for a long time. And I think what has happened to a large extent is that you've got lots of leaders in the church now who themselves haven't been able to make that transition into the spiritual world in an experiential way. And they don't know quite how to hold that, but they do know how to hold the piece that kind of protects people from making that transition. So it's kind of an ironic paradox at that point.
Yeah. Now, there's one of the things that's kind of fascinating is in your book, there's a distinction between infinity and eternity. And
right.
I'm wondering if you might share that with us.
Absolutely. I got that term infinity. The way I'm using it in the book is the same way that Carlos Castaneda uses it in his books and his work with the Mexican shaman Don Juan. And Don Juan makes the comment that the real task of human beings at this point in time is to connect with infinity. And for me, that means this movement or the direct personal experience of non-physical influences, non-physical spiritual interactions, moving into non-physical terrains that are not accessible necessarily to the five physical senses, but are accessible to us in other ways. And that's what he meant by infinity, and that's what I mean by infinity. And in the book, I'm kind of contrasting that with the preoccupation of the church, which tends to be that of eternity. And eternity is this, it revolves around one particular question. What's going to happen to you when you die? Are you going to go to heaven or are you going to go to hell? And of course, the dividing line depends on, you know, whether you've said the right words or whether you've connected with the right denomination or whether you've kept the sacraments or whether you've been generally more good than you've been bad. Depends on what your tradition is, what that dividing line is, and it shifts all over the place. Mm-hmm. But that's quite different from this pursuit of infinity. And this infinity is something that's been held by traditions for thousands and thousands of years. And there have been different ways to begin to access that, sometimes through meditation, sometimes through prayer, sometimes through dance, sometimes through yoga. And what has happened over the years is that it's been reserved primarily for those who have really dedicated, you know, lots and lots of time and lots of effort, lots and lots of years to the pursuit of whatever that technology was. But I think we're entering into a time now where it is possible for ordinary people, like maybe you and me, you know, an ordinary contractor who can fall off of a roof, begin to enter into these places of infinity, these places of wonder and majesty and absolute exhilarating journeys.
Yes. Wow. Talk about a... No wonder we have to have a hitchhiker's guide here. That's the power of your book. We need some help. And it's especially nice to know that these magical, these what we would call mystical experiences, which I guess at some level when we become aware of actually much more than our three-dimensional reality, it's just ordinary. But from a three-dimensional standpoint, this stuff is so extraordinary and hard to make sense of. And so we have to have some support. And one of the things that's so sweet about your work to me is the reminder that you don't have to be some sort of a studied religious person. You don't have to have some special qualifications. Just being born, that we have that ability. It's within us.
That is absolutely correct, and I think that's what so many people forget is that they're always looking for something outside themselves that is going to show them the way. But, you know, these states of awareness that I'm talking about in the book that fall under this category of infinity, I think really are very natural states to us. We have just learned to ignore them for the most part. And really, it's not all that esoteric when you think about it. We have the ability to move into altered states of consciousness. In fact, we do it all the time through the day. If you've ever had the experience, for instance, of driving down the road on the interstate, and suddenly you realize that you've missed your exit. It's 50 miles back, and you have no memory of any of that landscape or any of the time that has been intervened. Well, where have you been? You've been someplace other than in the front seat of your car driving your car. That's all been on autopilot. The real you has been focused in some other dimension. It could be something from the past. It could be something you're anticipating from the future. It could be any number of things that are not a part of this physical reality. We do this all the time. So we're constantly shifting our awareness, constantly shifting our consciousness. You know, one of the biggest shifts that we go through every day is the shift that we go into when we move into sleep. And yet, that's a very, very normal thing. But think about what happens. You are actually leaving this physical reality with your awareness and moving off into a completely different dimension that you might remember only as a dream. But still, it's a very real movement that we often overlook when we think about these kinds of things that we classify with the movement of consciousness.
Mm. Wow. Wow. This is fabulous. Now, in getting inspired for your book, I'm just wondering if you might share perhaps a tidbit of something that would help tantalize the listeners on why they'd want to open that book right away, just go and order it, because we know somewhere within us that we're so much more. And we see
right.
examples of this in athletics and in different things in the world. Can you help give us a little
sure.
taste here?
Absolutely. And this is an experience that happened to me even before I fell off of the roof. And when I was in my early 20s, I had sort of a philosophy of life that, if it scared me, I probably should do it. For some reason, I just wanted to have adventure, and I knew that adventure was going to take me out of my comfort zone. So I thought, I better get used to that. And one of the things that really scared me was the idea of hitchhiking. So, of course, I knew I had to do it. It turned out that my sister was moving from Ohio out to Tucson, Arizona. She needed somebody to help her. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time. So I thought, I'll help her drive out to Tucson, move her furniture, and then I will hitchhike back to Pennsylvania. But I'd never been to California, so I didn't want to go straight back to Pennsylvania, so I decided to head west after I dropped her off, or she dropped me off, and I stuck my thumb out and headed to California. At one point, I got picked up by a trucker who was one of the original Hell's Angels. And,
Ooh.
Think, here I am, just a preppy guy, very naive in so many ways, and here I am climbing into the cab with this guy who's just lived a life so radically different from mine. And yet, we hit it off immediately. He just had all kinds of stories to tell, and it wasn't long before, he was buying me lunch, and we were driving down the road a little bit more, and then he was heading in one direction, and I was heading another. And so we got to Big Sur, California, and he dropped me off there. And as I'm listening to this truck roll away, the echoes of the diesel, I felt this real loneliness start to come over me, because I really enjoyed this guy's company, and it was like I was saying goodbye to a real friend. And so as I'm standing there, if you've ever been to Big Sur, California, there's these redwoods that soar up into the sky. It's just an incredible place. And as I'm standing there, I got really scared because the temperature was dropping very quickly. I had no idea where I was going to be that evening, where I was going to spend the night, where my next ride was going to come from. And then all of a sudden, it felt like the scene around me shifted. And the redwoods kind of came to life, and there was a spiritual essence that started radiating from them, and the sunlight was streaking down at this 45-degree angle, and the light was dancing in front of me, and it felt as if the barrier between myself and the world began to disappear, and there was this merging into oneness that I had never experienced before. And in that moment, the irony was that I felt that I was completely, totally and utterly safe. It was the safest I've ever been in my life, despite the fact that here was the most vulnerable I'd ever been in my life up to that point in time. So it was a real lesson to me that not only can we move into non-physical dimensions, but we can discover the spirit that lies within this world if we allow ourselves to move into positions of extreme vulnerability at times, because then we can become opened up in ways that we could never dream.
And do you feel like going on that ride with the trucker hitchhiking was like moving into that vulnerability?
Absolutely. Yes, for me it was, because I truly had never done anything like that in my life whatsoever. When you're hitchhiking, and of course the title of the book comes from that experience, when you're hitchhiking, there you really are at the mercy of everything that comes your way. You have no ability whatsoever to control the circumstances of your life. And when you do that, it requires trusting something beyond yourself to get you through that experience. And for me, that experience of hitchhiking was perhaps the most wonderful trip I've ever had in my life, because I got to meet the most incredible people. And the great thing about hitchhiking is that they know that they will never see you again. And so they will tell you everything about their lives. And and that's really, really a precious thing. I can tell you that. It's really amazing.
Wow. Here's Eckhart Tolle and so many others are talking about be in the now. And
yes.
I think I just heard you mentioning that you had a whole time from wherever it was in Arizona to Big Sur of
right.
being in that space.
Right. It absolutely was. Because time becomes meaningless at that point. You know, your time is measured by the sun as it moves across the sky, and it's measured by, you know, the circumstances that you find yourself in, the people that you're communicating with. And it's a completely different way of engaging the world, and I think that's probably the thing that I'm trying to emphasize in the book, is that there are many, many different ways of engaging this world, but so often we get locked into one particular way that is habitual, and that's a habitual way of perception. It's a habitual state of consciousness, and we forget that there's a cornucopia of other perspectives that are just waiting for us to be for us to discover them.
Wow. You know what comes to mind? Because when we think of magic, somehow it tends to be something amazing. And yet, as you talk to me, your journey with the one of the founders of the Hells Angels was truly magic. And one way we describe it is just being in the now, being very present. Maybe we're redefining magic here.
Well, you know, I think, between you and me, and I wouldn't say this to too many other people, but I think that when we allow ourselves to shift in awareness and shift in perception, that every aspect of this world is magical. That's its natural state, and our natural state is magical as well. But for some reason, we have learned to ignore that, and I'm not quite sure what that reason is. But when you begin to discover it, then, as we were talking before about this issue of the path, then you find that your path is dotted with all these little signposts and nudges and magical moments that really give you a different perspective on what's happening.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, I don't know if we can, sometimes I think a little bit of the magical and perhaps mystical in a similar way.
Correct.
And that's such a theme in your book, isn't it?
Yes, because for our society has decided that really the only thing that's important is the physical world. And in making that decision, not everybody, but it seems to be kind of a predominant theme of how we, from a cultural perspective, look at the world around us. But we don't realize that we have lopped off a tremendous panorama that's available to us in doing that. And so, as I mentioned before, even within the physical world, you have this spiritual essence that can come through at the most interesting times. But we also, as human beings, have the capacity to engage the metaphysical world, the world beyond the physical, in ways that we simply haven't been taught how to do. But just because we haven't been taught how to do it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, because it does.
Yeah.
And so when people wonder why they have this feeling of something missing in their lives, it's precisely because we have virtually outlawed a huge portion of what it means to be human. Because all of this is part of the human condition. It's our birthright as human beings and as spiritual beings walking through this physical world.
Yeah. Now, this is so interesting. In Carlos Castaneda's books, they start off and there's drugs used quite frequently until the very last book. At which point he says, well, you know, you can use all these drugs to get to these amazing mystical experiences, but you don't really need to. You can get there
right.
without them. And
mm-hmm.
and then here we have these these folks that are considered in by many people outlaws, the Hells Angels, many different biker groups that are using drugs and very much into having out of body and different kinds of amazing experiences, and yet they're kind of considered pretty scary and leave them alone. And it's just kind of interesting because there they are in one way reminding us that there's so much more than our normal reality.
Right, and I think one of the ways that we kind of impoverish our experience is that we will make judgments about people beforehand. You know, we'll judge them on the basis of, you know, what group they're a part of or the way they're dressed or things we may have heard from other people, and so we don't take the time to engage them on a personal level. And that's one of the great things about hitchhiking is that's the only thing that you have is to engage someone on a personal level. And when you do and you hear their life stories and you hear their insight and you hear their wisdom that they carry that maybe they would never tell anyone else, it is really remarkable. And I think if we're willing to listen and we're willing to open up and open our hearts to other people, this journey through life becomes much, much richer because we can move beyond the stereotypes and begin to engage the essence of another person, and that's truly wonderful.
Yes, yes. Oh, now, in your book, I know sometimes we like to have like little practical steps along the way to, you know, to help us, because it's easy enough to say, well, just be present with someone
right.
And open up these things and allow yourself to be vulnerable. I'm wondering, from your experience, are there things that you could share with my listeners that would be maybe a little tidbit or two of something practical that they might begin to do in the middle of their day when they're sitting at their desk or when they're sitting at home in the evening with by themselves or with some family members?
Well, the list is endless, so let me just mention a couple of things that I think are could be pretty important. For me, one of the most important things is to listen to the longing that we may have in our hearts. For most of us, that's not a very comfortable thing. And we have this sense of something missing or something that we should be attending to, or we have a passion that we're neglecting or whatever it is. And we have learned, to tell ourselves, well, I can't do that, or I don't have the skills for that, or I don't have the time for that. And, oh, gosh, I could never be like that. And so we learn to push it away. And so every time it comes up, it's a kind of painful reminder to us. Well, if you can begin to, when you feel that, instead of trying to push it away, give it a little bit of breathing room, give it a little bit of space, and give it especially a little bit of time. Because that longing is the beginning of the path that is unique to you alone. If you try to live your life according to everybody else's dictates, you're going to have a life of endless sorrow. But if you will take the courage to turn toward that longing, that inner passion that is yours alone, that's the beginning of a life that is truly magical, truly worth living, and filled with wonder. So I think for me that's one of the first things. The second thing I would suggest to people is that, as I was mentioning before, in the course of our normal daily life, we move through many, many different forms of consciousness, many different perspectives, and our culture has tried to tell us that it's really only one form of consciousness that's legitimate, and that's the form of consciousness that you use to make money. And we forget that there's so much more to being a human being, and a lot of that happens not in the activity that comes with the economic endeavor or taking care of the body, but a lot of that comes in those quiet moments that maybe just take us a moment or two, or stealing away for a sunset, or staring off into the through the window and remembering something from our childhood, or even taking a nap in the afternoon. Those are things that sort of allow this more creative aspect of ourselves to come to the fore, and that too can be an impetus on the road of this path of spirituality.
I love it. Okay. And And that doesn't mean that a person has to go spend a lot of money to do this stuff.
Right.
Which is handy.
Well, but on the other hand, I don't want to be remiss, since I am the executive director of the Monroe Institute, to put a plug in here and say that, if I may.
Because this is another choice, too, is if you want to go beyond. Yes, we could go contemplate the grass a little bit, or a tree, or hug someone for about 5 minutes and just breathe with them.
Correct.
You know, those kinds of things. And then, to me, please, the Institute, to be able to say for those on the path that you offer something amazing there, please share some more about that.
Sure. The work that we do at the Monroe Institute comes out of some experiences that Robert Monroe, the founder, was having back in the 1950s, where he was having spontaneous out-of-body experiences. And you can imagine back in the 1950s, there were very few people that were talking about this kind of thing. It wasn't part of the national conversation at all. So he was in the position of having to find his own way with this thing that was happening to him that he did not understand, and that was really pretty disruptive in a lot of ways. He was involved in radio and a very successful writer and producer of radio shows, and eventually got into cable television. But this out-of-body experience was something that really shaped his life in so many ways. And because he was an expert in sound, having been in radio, he decided to see if there was some way he could create sound patterns that could help him and others move into and out of these states of awareness that are really pretty elusive and may take a long time to discover on your own. And so he did develop something, a technology that he calls HemiSync technology, and it's a very gentle way to move people rather very quickly into deep meditative states that would ordinarily take maybe decades of practice through meditation to achieve.
Talk about a shortcut.
Right, and so in a matter of days, we can, this world of this infinity that I've talked about, I think Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven, this can be accessed in an experiential way by ordinary people, not saints, shamans, and gurus, but, a contractor, and maybe even a radio host. So, who would have thunk it? And to date, we've had about 30,000 people go through the Institute, and I can tell you that one of the reasons why those of us who are working there are doing so is because we've been touched very, very deeply by this work, but we also get to see the results of the vast majority of people who come through the program, who point to their time at the Institute as being the pivotal moment of their lives. So many people will say to us, this has been the best week of my life, or this has been the most important week of my life. And we notice that they're never quite the same after that, that a new world has been opened up to them that isn't about belief or theology or speculation, but it's about their own direct personal experience, and that's a very, very powerful thing.
Yeah. Wow. This is wonderful. Is there anything a person needs to do to prepare for this kind of a breakthrough experience where they don't have to do a whole lot? I mean, it's not like calisthenics, is it?
No. In fact, in some cases, the less you do beforehand, the better. Because what we let me just back up and say that in a typical group, we'll have 24 people who will go through the process, and it starts on a Saturday afternoon, and then people leave on the following Friday morning. And you're there the whole week. We provide room and board and also the program, and we have two facilitators who stay through the whole week. And as they go through that, the baseline of their consciousness begins to shift pretty gradually, but very definitely as they move through the week. And we'll find that out of the 24 people, there might be one or maybe two people who don't feel like they've gotten what they really wanted or were expecting. The rest of them are ecstatic about the experience. What we've noticed is that those one or two people more often than not, what happens is that maybe they've read some books or they've heard somebody else talking, and they have this image in their mind of what is going to happen. And so sometimes they can kind of develop this tunnel vision of expectation. There might be all kinds of other things that are happening for them, but they simply can't notice it because their expectation is directed in to this one goal or one experience. And so they're disappointed in that. Whereas we find that if people don't try to prepare too much and come with very few expectations and I'll just allow the experience to unfold, then that's when the magic really takes hold.
Okay. So to set aside the expectations.
Correct. Correct. And also, just this is not about efforting in at all. In fact, if anything, it's about simply letting go and going for the ride. And if people can do that, it's terrific. But even if you can't do that, basically what happens is, you know, we provide a bed for you to lay down in. You sleep it there at night, but you also listen to the exercises in that bed. So the rhythm is we wake you up in the morning, you get breakfast, and we set up an exercise, and then you get to go back to bed again. And then you wake up, talk about the exercise, and then you get to go to bed again. So it's a great rest, if nothing else.
Ah, wow. Wow, that's you gotta like that. It's like everyone, at the very least, you get the rest that you've needed.
Correct.
And then beyond that, if you just allow. And to me, some of this stuff, I guess, with the years of experience, because people, as we, quantum physics is kind of like opening the door to, well, there's more that's going on. This desk looks solid, but actually at a subatomic level, it's mostly empty space, which, of course, if that doesn't bend someone's mind, then they're just not really taking in what that really means.
Because
it's like, oh, how do you make sense out of this? Come on now. You know, that's pretty hard. But with some of these out-of-body experiences, is that things that people, you know, have vivid experiences of in time, or because you think, oh, well, just you're pretending, you're imagining. Is this really happening?
There are many aspects to your question. So let me start off by saying that first of all, the thing I want to head off here is the idea that the Monroe Institute is an out-of-body institute. It's true that Robert Monroe's early work and his books were about the out-of-body experience, but as he began to realize, and we certainly have realized since then, that the out-of-body experience is just one small slice of a very large pie of the capacity of human consciousness. So that's where some people get hung up, in fact, is they read Bob Monroe's books and they say, I'm going there for an out-of-body experience, and they have a very rigid idea of what that means for them. So one of our tasks is to say, well, you know, maybe that'll happen for you, and maybe it won't. In fact, we're not guaranteeing it in any way, but it's our hope that if you don't find that you will find something that will be equally, if not even more compelling and wonderful for you. And that, in fact, is what happens to the vast majority of people. The issue of the out-of-body experience for most of them simply drops away and becomes insignificant. That doesn't mean that some people don't have them, because they do. We figure that maybe about 15% of the people who come through have some form of an out-of-body experience, but that's not the key component to what we do. But your question was also about, is this about imagination, or is it a real experience? If we have time, I can give you a personal experience of that. How are we doing on time?
We've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay. Let me just, because this goes a ways to answering your question. We take people through a series of destination points in human consciousness that we simply give numbers to, because we want to bias people as little as possible and help them to simply move into the experience without preconceptions. So focus 10 is the first place that we take them to, and that's called the mind awake, body asleep state. Then they go to focus 12, which is the experience of expanded awareness. Focus 15, which is the state beyond time. And then focus 21 is the final destination point in our initial program, and that's the bridge state between physical and non-physical reality. Well, in my first program that I went there, when we went to Focus 21, this bridge state between physical and non-physical reality, I found myself going to this city of light, and it was absolutely astonishing. If we had more time, I would describe it in more detail. Mm-hmm. But at one point, I went into this gathering of people, and these people were people of light, and it was like in an auditorium of some sorts. And I noticed there was one person off to my right who was not a person of light. It was some woman, but I didn't really recognize her.
Okay.
Well, I was absolutely stunned by the whole experience, and I couldn't. I was running around. I wanted to take in everything that I possibly could because I didn't know if I was going to get back there again. So after the experience, we all come together as a group, and if you want to talk about what happened to you, you're welcome to do that. One of the first woman raises her hand, and she says, I went to the city of light, and she went on to describe so much of what I had experienced there. I thought, my goodness, did we all go there? Could this be a real place?
Wow.
But nobody else talked about it, and finally I couldn't contain myself anymore, and I raised my hand, and I said, I went to the city of light too, and this woman looks at me across the room, and she says, yes, I know, I saw you there. And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing, but that's not the end of the story.
Yeah.
After this gathering, we go up to the next experience, and there's a woman in the group, another woman, who comes up to me, and she's kind of whining and kidding, and she says, I want to go to the city of light, too. And I don't know why I said it. I said, okay, I'll take you there, like I knew how to do that. Well, we go into the next experience, and I had completely forgotten about it, and all of a sudden, this woman's face appears in front of me. I go, oh, that's right, I was supposed to take you to the city of light. Let's go. I grab her hand, whatever that means in these states. I grabbed her hand, and we go shooting off into this place, and suddenly we're flying over this city of light. And I let go of her, and I said, you're on your own. I got things I want to do. After the experience, we come together, and as we're walking down, I see her, and I said, oh, I took you to the city of light, didn't I? And she said, yes, and you practically tore my arm off.
Oh, no.
Okay, so that gives you some indication that this is not entirely subjective reality. It can be. But there also can be objective components that from time to time you can verify with other people. So
yeah.
That's one way, one indication that maybe there's more that's happening here than just imagination.
Right, right. And to me, one of the things that for my own life and maybe for others that want to address is how do we take this back into our, quote, normal reality and bridge the gap between what's been our normal reality, go into this transcendent or this expanded or alternate, or there's been many different words for it, reality, and then be functional and use it to actually enhance our lives versus go back in and go nuts and go, wow, I can't handle this anymore, and call a psychiatrist or just dismiss it because it's too big to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So can you help there a little?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And, you know, I think that there is such a thing as, you know, our first program is called The Gateway Voyage, and, you know, sometimes people will talk about the post-gateway blues, you know, this sense of going back to this normal reality that just doesn't compare to what you've just experienced in this wonderful week of exploration. But what we have found, and we've done a few studies on this just recently, looking at what are the long-term effects of the Monroe Institute programs. And what we found for the most part is that rather than it being, there can be a period of adjustment, certainly, and a period maybe even of loss or depression that something wonderful has slipped away. But long term, it seems as if our graduates actually learn to adjust to reality better because they're no longer confined by the physical world alone. They know that they are more than their physical bodies, which gives you a very, very different perspective on life. They know through experience that there are influences that are interpenetrating this world that most people simply do not understand and work very hard to ignore for the most part. They also have a sense of guidance maybe that they never had before. They begin to open up to new states of compassion for other people. They start to express themselves in a variety of ways that they never have before. So what happens over time is life actually becomes much richer and much fuller. So while you may have that sort of post-program down period, the long-term benefits are far outweigh that.
Okay. All right. So, that's interesting. I'd love to look at some of these aspects, because I was just thinking about how when birth is done, that's very conscious and very loving. There's painless birth that takes place, water birth, different ones, and when all that is done, and the baby emerges into this reality. And the moms, they don't have postpartum depression because there's this continuity of the connection. And so I'm being given something, a message to share this with you for the people that come in and are, in a way, being birthed by you into this other part of their reality. Maybe we'll get a chance to discuss this further.
It's a great analogy, and I think you're right. It is kind of a birth in a lot of ways, but it's a birth into remembering what we really are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not like it wasn't there before. It's like we were so busy and distracted that we didn't notice it.
Right. Because the baby comes from somewhere and before it enters into this reality, and so it's just a matter of remembering where it came from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is wonderful. Now, not everyone's going to be able to make it out. Is it Faber or Faber? How do you say it?
We say Faber.
Faber, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And on your website, that's the MonroeInstitute.org,
correct.
They can get some things that they can bring into their homes, right?
Correct. We have a variety of CDs that they can offer, that they can purchase, and to do this work at home. It's more difficult at home because you have to face all the distractions that you engage on a daily basis, but I think it's still very much worth it for those people who can't attend our week-long program.
Yeah, okay. So good. That's important that we can have... We can have something going, or also, I guess, a number of people would go. Are there several levels of this course that people go to?
There's
a week-long initial experience.
Correct, but I should also say that we also offer two-day programs if people go to our website, they can find out where those programs are being offered, because those are off-campus programs that we want to make available to as many people as possible. So we have outreach facilitators who teach in a variety of locations, so they can look at that. After the initial six-day program, the Gateway Voyage, we have a variety of what we call graduate programs as well. And I would encourage people to go to our website, look those up, and you'll find the descriptions there. Plus, they'll find a tremendous amount of research material, lots of articles and videos for them to look at as well.
Wow. Oh, this is fun. Your book, the Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide, would you say this ties in to some of the work you're doing at the Monroe Institute?
Absolutely, because the last book, the third of the book, is actually about my experience of that I had at the Monroe Institute, and what I'm doing in the book is connecting my training and experience in the Christian tradition with the work that we're doing at the Monroe Institute, because I'm very convinced that when Jesus was talking about the kingdom of heaven, he was actually talking about states of consciousness that are available to ordinary people in the present moment. And I think that's the key that we have lost, and I think that really is the key to understanding not only Jesus and what he was doing, but to understanding all of the mystical traditions and also connecting that to what we do at the Monroe Institute.
Yeah. Wow. Boy, well, this is exciting. So, folks, and they can get the book on the website or through Amazon, or where do you suggest?
Amazon.com. Barnes & Noble is carrying the book as well. They can also go to my website, which is called spiritualhitchhiker.com.
Ah, okay. Spiritualhitchhiker.com. Folks, what a treat. Are you in for something good when you pick up that book and then check out the work that Paul is doing with the Monroe Institute? So here in these times where the world around us seems like so much chaos, what we're hearing is that there's another place that we can go that's available to us that is actually transcendent of all this stuff. So
yeah.
When they said, be in the world but not of it, and here's Paul helping us to actually fulfill that admonition.
Well said. Right.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure, Kenneth. Thank you for having me on your program.
It's a pleasure. Many blessings to your work, and I look forward to actually scheduling an experience, because I would love to come and partake in the wonderful things that you do at the Monroe Institute, and I'll certainly be telling others about this so they can tune in, and my listeners, tell your friends, tune in, you know, every week to hear more fun and adventure here on Advanced Living. And Paul, just wishing you a magnificent continuing hit, because you haven't finished hitchhiking, I take it, in terms of your spirituality.
it's a metaphor for life.
Good. Well, many happy travels to you. Thank you, and
Ken.
Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let go and let God, let myself go.